Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia, and with me, as always, is the ever-prepared, I've said it time and again, but she is the engine that keeps this rolling. Jennifer Wollman, say hello.
Hello, everybody. It's great to be back. Another week.
Absolutely. We are very, very excited. We have a very special guest, and we're going to be speaking about something that we're very passionate about, which is CRAs. So, Jennifer, would you like to introduce our guest?
Sure, I'd love to. So today we're interviewing George Camejo. He's the executive director of the City of Hollywood's Community Redevelopment Agency. And he's going to tell us how we can work with the agencies, what kind of programs they have, and basically what the goals are. So welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. We love the City of Hollywood.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and we really appreciate you sharing all this information with our listeners. So before we get into it, tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you a native? What brought you to Hollywood, et cetera?
Well, I grew up in South Florida. My family and I left Cuba in 1967, and I grew up in West Palm Beach, but went to school in Florida at Florida State, and basically grew up in this region since I was 8 years old. So I am a little older than that now.
Yeah. You're going to make a lot of our Seminole listeners very, very happy.
It's not a good year so far for being a Seminole. But we'll see. We'll see how it ends
up.
You
can only go up. You can only go
exactly,
up, George.
Exactly. You got to find the bottom.
George, how did you find yourself at the City of Hollywood?
Well, I actually came to Hollywood after I retired from Boca Raton. I had been the CRA director and development services director at the City of Boca Raton, culminating 28 and a half years. I was very involved in the downtown redevelopment efforts in Boca Raton, beginning in 1985 with the first art park concept that led ultimately to the creation of Meisner Park, and left Boca in 2010. And in early 2011, came to work for Hollywood. So I've been very blessed, honestly, to have been engaged in two cities that, in my opinion, are pretty extraordinary in many aspects of living and quality of life. All the things that people love about their city, I think, are very prevalent in both Hollywood as well as Boca Raton. And I should also point out, Boca Raton for Meisner Park received notoriety as one of the great public spaces in America by the American Planning Association. And 3 years later, that was in 2010, and 3 years later, Hollywood, the Hollywood Boardwalk, received the same recognition from the same entity. So it's a very proud thing that I can identify in my career. So
that's a wonderful achievement. And I've been to both of those cities. I go there quite frequently, obviously, Fernando and I do with all we do in South Florida. And they are beautiful cities. They're the ideal live, work, play scenario, you know. And it's interesting because both, even though you had your hand in both of them, they're both very unique and distinct.
Absolutely.
They're not the same, which is wonderful. I remember when I moved here from California, I was a little shocked. I felt like all of Florida was basically a strip mall, and there was very little character among the cities. Yeah. And I'm very, very happy that you have been involved, because I love the characters of each one of those places. So kudos to you and what you do and have done, and we're looking forward to see how our listeners can participate. We run a wide gamut. We have investors, brokers, owner users, companies moving here, et cetera, that listen to try to identify where they want to be. So if you could tell us a little bit about what a CRA does in general, because we're all about demystifying commercial real estate. Sure. So what a CRA does in general, and then get into some of the specifics of Hollywood.
Well, at the most basic, you know, aspect of a CRA, the CRA is charged with implementing their redevelopment plan. And so a redevelopment plan is created at the onset of the, you know, creation of the CRA. And in the instance of Hollywood, the downtown CRA was created in 1979, followed by the beach in 1997. It's one CRA with two districts. You know, the fundamental of what the CRA should be doing are, you know, somewhat uniform, but the details of what it takes specifically in any given area are obviously different. The formula in downtown Boca Raton was significantly different than the formula in Hollywood, but the fundamentals are basically the same. It needs to be clean, safe, compelling. And these days, the term resilient, which was, you know, somewhat absent in the early days of redevelopment, is now a very important aspect of all coastal redevelopment. And then the other important aspect is you need to have, you know, reliable and consistent public policy. And the public policy aspect of it is not just in, you know, zoning regulations and such, but it's on the fundamentals of, you know, ensuring that you apply code compliance and aspects of it, like what we're going to be talking about. Grants and development incentives are all part of that. And all those programs and policies, you know, obviously need to be implemented, you know, consistently and fairly.
When people are looking at CRAs and they're also looking at an economic development organization, so speak a little bit about the differences between the two, right? Because they both are they symbiotic with each other?
Well, in instances where and you really need both. The CRA can be a tool, but the CRA working in its ideal form is really creating public investment that spurs private investment. And so every CRA is charged with the implementation of capital projects. Now, those capital projects can be public-private partnerships. So development incentives through the establishment of a development agreement that shares the taxable value created by a private investment can be part of it. But the other aspect of what I consider development incentives is just the investment in the public realm. Right now in downtown, we are, you know, nearing the completion of a $14 million investment in the core of the downtown streetscape. And so there is no question that developers that are currently investing in the vicinity are very excited that, you know, their patrons are now going to have this amazing amenity that they will, you know, be able to dine and shop and enjoy an ambiance that is really second to none in the region. Now, on the beach, the same thing. The investment on the Hollywood Broadwalk, without that investment, you know, there is no question that Margaritaville, as an example, would have never happened. The increase in value that we have experienced on Hollywood Beach is a direct result of both the CRA investment on the Broadwalk and the side streets, as well as the investment in Margaritaville.
You mentioned private-public partnerships. Does the city of Hollywood currently have any? And if so, what are some of them?
Sure. I can tell you, outside of the CRA, I know the city is establishing significant public-private partnerships. For example, at the Orangeburg Golf Course, there are a variety of investments that the city has made outside of the CRA. And I would be remiss if I didn't identify one of the reasons why the city, because I don't know how much you know about the city's history, but back in 2012, the city had to declare financial urgency. And so at that point in time, there was this clamor to rid of the Beat CRA because the city could not afford to continue making the contribution to the CRA tax increment. And we can get into the details of how that funding actually works. But in 2015, I recommended to the CRA board and the city commission that the Beat CRA begin a standard refunding of the beach increment that would range, at that time I recommended 17. It ended up being 25%. But the important detail of that is that we didn't kill the golden goose to eat the last egg. We agreed that we would refund, you know, a portion of the increment, allow the city to take advantage of that refunding. And so from 2018 on, that 25%, which is attributable to the city contribution, now goes into the city's general fund, and the other 25% attributable to the county's contribution now goes toward low to moderate income housing programs and projects in low to moderate income areas of the city. And honestly, in my career, I can tell you that I'm just as proud of that as I am of Meisner Park and both CRA districts in Hollywood, because the success of the Beat CRA has created opportunity that now benefits global Hollywood, not just, you know, one district. And that's ideal, in my opinion.
Kudos to you. I love that outside the box thinking. That shows your years of experience and being able to be creative and save the CRA because you knew the value of the CRA, especially in a financially difficult position when the gut reaction is let's cut.
Exactly. Exactly. And I totally understood the predicament that the city was in. And for the CRA, the most important thing is to continue the investment and, like I said earlier, the consistent and reliable public policy. Because if we had said, okay, no more CRA, you can imagine, I mean, the value would have dropped like a lead balloon. And so through that mechanism, and kudos to our mayor for championing that cause with the county, because the ultimate agreement with the county led to the county committing their portion of the revenue for these projects, but it also meant that the city could use their share to go into the city general fund.
That's great. What a great win-win. And if they hadn't done the CRA, if they had had to terminate it, imagine where they would be now, right? Would have been so far behind and you would have missed out on this huge growth that Miami has been enjoying for the last pretty much decade.
Yeah.
Well, it also speaks to, you know, there's one key word that you mentioned, but I think in financially difficult moments, it's very easy to be a prisoner of the moment, right? And not to look further ahead. And the other part of it is, you know, and we always stress this to the people that we work with, is consistency is a very important component of success, right? And so in any endeavor is what you consistently do that is going to lead to that success. And for at that moment, it would have been detrimental to the current success of the city if you would have deviated from what, you know, what the investment was at that moment.
Yeah. There's a saying in Spanish, is pan para hoy y hambre para mañana.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And that's exactly what we would have had.
Yeah. You know? No, undoubtedly. We always encourage, especially in commercial real estate, because we see commercial real estate having a hand in everything that happens in a community. And we see the value in getting involved in an EDC and really understanding what is the EDCs do a really great job of selling the location, right? And primarily that's where everything starts in real estate. And then when you dive into what a CRA does specifically in a district, it allows you to work with people that are envisioning a future that is not for what the immediacy of what it is today, but what it can be. And so we would love to hear from you, your perspective as to how people that are working in commercial real estate, how involved they should be in what a CRA does and what an EDC does for a city.
Right. Well, I can tell you the position that Hollywood enjoys or has enjoyed with their CRA is almost no longer attainable in terms of a financing structure. Because in Broward County, as an example, they only allow what is referred to as TIF-less CRAs. Let me back up for a second and explain the funding mechanism for a CRA, which what occurs is, as an example, in 1979, when the downtown was created, the taxable value of the downtown district, 560 some odd acres, was identified. And then any growth in the value of that taxable area that would occur over the years based on the millage, primarily the millages of the city and of the county, based on that additional value created, is the tax increment that goes back to the CRA for reinvestment in that area. And so you can imagine over the years in the downtown, the growth has grown exponentially. And that is what gives the CRA the ability to make these investments in the downtown on the boulevard. And it's what allowed the Beach CRA to make the investments on the Broadwalk, side streets, Margaritaville, etc. I can tell you from the time that we announced the agreement for Margaritaville, that was around 2013, the taxable value of the beach grew by over $3 billion over a three-year period. So it's almost $1 billion a year in growth that the CRA realized from just the announcement. Now, in fairness, a lot of that increase was Margaritaville itself, but the implication to other taxable value was, you know, from real estate sales, et cetera. And to this day, a lot of the value increases on the beach is attributable to the selling of real estate. People continue to sell and trade, and the net result is that these areas have grown, you know, like I'm saying, exponentially from the original number. I can tell you that the beach value was about $500 million when the CRA for the beach was created in 97. The taxable value now, I think, is around $4 billion or more. I have to look at that. But those are the kind of numbers we're talking about.
But you were saying that now you couldn't do that because they're proposing a TIFless. Is that, did we get that term right?
First of all, I mean, you can probably tell from my career, I've been a redevelopment director since 1988. So needless to say, I may be biased in my in my favoring of the CRA structure. But I think the CRA structure is one that, you know, creates value. And you don't create value, you know, by simply handing out money. You know, like in the instance of these development agreements that I'm referring to, we agree up front, Mr. Developer, that we will give you a share of the value that you create, and I should say Mr. or Mrs. Developer or Miss Developer. So based on the value that you create, we will share that value and its implication on the tax increment with you as high a rate as 50, even 90%. But you have to create the value. I think the problem that some CRAs have had over the years, and Hollywood is no exception. Before I arrived, you know, some development agreements were structured in such a way that the payment was made up front. If you don't provide the incentive and the direct connect to the obligation to develop, then you kind of miss the boat because there is just no incentive for the developer to deliver on the product that is going to create the catalyst for other things to happen.
When you put all the money up front, it almost stops the conversation, right?
Exactly.
Because it's a one-time conversation. But if the money is given out in increments, right, or throughout the life of the project, then it also keeps the conversation going, which is that, you know, you want the CRA to have input as well. And you want to hear also what issues are you seeing, what's happening. But, you know, so I can see why putting all that up front is really detrimental to the continuation of the relationship.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about Hollywood's current goals. I know you said that it's probably going to end, that the CRA sunsets. Is it for both of them in 2027?
It is. Interesting. There's a lot of history, and I'll try to be as brief about it as possible. But in 1995, Broward County delegated to all cities with CRAs the ability to determine the lifespan of their CRA. And so over the years, there's been some disagreement over that. And that was part of the reason why the county agreed with an arrangement for refunding a portion of the increment and agreeing to allow their 25% to go into these projects within the city and allowing the city to retain their share to go into the general fund. And so the county basically wanted some, you know, agreement on when the CRA and their obligation would cease to exist. And that was, you know, basically the bartering tool that the city, or the bargaining chip that the city had in order to establish the agreement. And so pursuant to that agreement, the CRA in its current structure for the downtown will cease to exist in 2025. Technically, it has been extended in order to receive a $3 million capped amount for a five-year period up until 2030 from Broward County, but the city will have no obligation to contribute their share of the increment to the downtown CRA beyond 2025. As it applies to the beach will sunset in 2027, and the county has agreed to make a contribution of $1.5 million per year for a 10-year period beyond 2027. And so based on that, as I'm describing, the current financial structure for each will go away in 2025 for the downtown, and in 2027 for the beach. And so, needless to say, our focus right now is on making sure that we finish out our projects, that we try to incentivize as much as possible private investment, both in the downtown and on the beach, through these grant opportunities. We've got a full-blown campaign to educate, to entice, to incentivize, to do whatever possible to get some of these private property owners to come in and take advantage.
And what are some of these grants?
The grants stem from the lowest, which is a pain only, which is capped at $15,000. And pain only basically means that it is just that, paint. Now, you can patch stucco where you need to, et cetera, but it is a pain only grant. So you would have to match our contribution at 50%. The next level is a property improvement grant, which we call a PIP. And so those are up to $75,000, provided that, again, you contribute an equal amount or greater as part of your property improvement grant. And those can be what we call a mini property improvement grant, which is $25,000 and under, which I have the authority to sign off on fairly quickly. The next layer up is hotel improvement project, and those are up to $250,000 with, again, a matching participation equal to or greater than the CRA contribution. We're also trying to entice the resiliency aspect of it. So we have increased seawall projects that used to be capped at $50,000. Contribution are now $75,000. And so seawalls are a significant investment, but they are so important when it comes to some of the key elements of coastal resiliency focus these days.
Now, other than the matches and the contributions for each of these grants, are there other criteria? Do they need to be, obviously, they need to be in one of the two CRA, in one of the two districts, correct, within the CRA?
That is correct. Now, the city is also offering similar grants, and they're managing those, you know, on a citywide basis. And I don't have enough information to really sound knowledgeable on that. So, but the good news is that the city is doing a similar effort with respect to, you know, conditions outside of the CRA district. Now, I've always believed that a fundamental tool in redevelopment is code compliance. And code compliance is an important tool because if you have a code violation on your property, and some of these are minor and some are major, but there is a way to at least get the attention of a private property owner by sitting down with them and saying, hey, you have these violations. Why don't we work together and figure out a way that you can address your violation? But we are beyond the violations, which you cannot use grant money to address code violations. But what we can do is we can net out the violations and break out those elements that are, you know, just enhancement. And so in the end, Mr. or Ms. Property Owner, you will end up with improved property, violations that would have otherwise cost you, you know, grief and effort to correct, and end up with a much more valuable piece of property. And so those are the types of conversations that we're trying to have. And but that is,
well, it's also great incentive, right? Because
exactly,
you know, people hate to have to spend money to address a violation, you know, but they get much more excited when they see the opportunity to increase their property value. And now they're going to get a portion of that money to be able to do that. So when they look at it holistically, it's a very different approach than just to say, well, now I have to spend this money.
Exactly.
On curing, you know, a violation. So
I just wanted to point out that the code issue is not the only way to approach. I mean, many property owners come in and want to invest, but for those conditions that, and you know it when you see it. So that's just one aspect of how that can be accomplished.
I remember years ago, there was a program like this in the city of Miami for Calle Ocho. And then, you know, there was a strip center and they decided to do it. And it was a facade, you know, it was a program just to enhance the facade, right? But then it started to spread like wildfire, you know, and they quickly ran out of money and then they were refunded because of the success of the program. But it was just a neighbor seeing, oh, you got to do that. And oh, they gave you this. And we were able to look at how beautiful the store looks. And then all of a sudden, you start to develop a sense of, you know, everybody wanted to enhance their
place.
Yeah,
it's really, you know, pride of ownership. When you get to that sweet spot where you have pride of ownership kind of prevalent, that's the ideal condition because there's an appreciation, not just for the public investment, but now they appreciate what they can do and what they have done if they, you know, improve the property.
For sure.
Do these grants then end when the CRA ends in 2025 and 2027, or can they continue because of the monies that are still going to be contributed by the county?
Well, that's a very good question, and we hope that there will be an answer to that. I suspect that many of the elected officials probably would want to continue since it's being done citywide. I would imagine that beyond 2027, there'll probably be some aspect of grant opportunity.
Now, because of the CRA, I guess it kind of ends, right? If you're not doing contributions anymore, you'll still get money from the county. Will that money be going into the CRA or into the general fund? And then now you just don't have a CRA?
Well, those are all very good questions that we look forward to identifying specifically. There are restrictions on how that money can be used, and it has to be basically for redevelopment purposes. But again, I do not anticipate being the CRA director beyond 2027 because I think it'll be time for me to begin to relax and enjoy life a little more. But but you know, I have a great deal of confidence. You know, and I should point out what one of the things that has made it particularly challenging for the elected body in Hollywood is the fact, as it relates to the implementation of the redevelopment plan, both for the downtown and the beach. As you probably know, the elected body in Hollywood is elected in districts, and so it's, you know, historically, and this was the calamity back in 2012 and 2015 when there was this clamor to get rid of the CRA. Because when in your district, you don't even have the money to fix potholes. And yet along the Broadwalk, the CRA is laying down decorative brick paver. That's not a good, you know, visual. And so the challenge to those elected officials was, my goodness, how do we take care of the most basic need in my district and still continue to spend money on the beach? Now, there's no question that the economic engine, the primary economic engine in Hollywood is Hollywood Beach. So protecting the main economic engine was equally as important. But how do you balance that with the basic needs of your own district? And so I give a lot of credit to the elected body for being able to maintain the commitment that it takes politically and financially to the investment, you know, on the beach and in the downtown that has been significant as compared to what had historically been the harsh reality in other districts of the city.
And to your point, the optics, and again, kudos, as you said, to those officials, because if I live in a district and I'm hitting that pothole every day, right, and then I see the beach and in my thought, I'm thinking, wait a minute, all these people have more money than I do. They have all this. They're getting all this. If they're getting all this money, what about our district? district and they don't put the bigger picture together because the bigger picture doesn't affect them today when they're getting their wheels realigned for the umpteenth time. Can you tell I hit a lot of potholes in Miami? Yes, my husband's like, you didn't see that. I'm like, I felt it.
We all felt it.
So how do you see, let's say, an agent that's working in the city? I know they don't have a lot of time, but in these districts, how do they work with the CRA, either to get the word out about your grants? I'm assuming that the CRA is actually writing to property owners and doing a marketing campaign. But how can agents help in an area if they're selling or leasing a property or have investors looking?
Well, there's a couple of ways. One, a lot of the information is directly available on our CRA website. The other way is to come in and meet with Christopher Crescito in our office, coordinates all of the grant programming. Lisa Leota, who is our redevelopment manager, is a great resource on the real estate side. She knows almost every single building, both in the downtown and the beach, and has a great pulse on the real estate market and the comings and goings in those aspects. Our website can be reached by looking up Florida's Hollywood, and that's what if you do that search, it'll come up.
Yeah, we're gonna include that link on our show notes. And yeah, I can vouch for Lisa. She is fast. I sent out an email and literally within 10 minutes I had an answer and I forward it, and these are who you need to speak with. So yes, very, very attentive. Your entire staff, I've got to say, it was a pleasure reaching out. Usually I was like, okay, I'm going to start with an email and then I'll start with a phone call if I don't hear back. And it was amazing. So, so kudos to your staff.
We've got a great staff at the CRA. Yeah.
Good. So do you have any more questions? Because if not, I'm getting into the fun part.
Let's get into the fun part. Exactly.
Not that all this isn't fun. We love real estate. We could keep you here hours talking about the what ifs and you know, what you see. But so what is your favorite place to eat in Hollywood? And since it's the CRA, let's keep it in one of your districts we're promoting that.
Well, I'll tell you, in downtown, I love the Greek Joint. He has probably one of the best pork chops that I've ever eaten. And I mean, it's chicken, everything about it. It's great drinks at night. So I would have to identify that. Now for lunch, I love Tipsy Boar. You can go in there and have a great mahi sandwich. It's always fresh. And I'm a big seafood lover. I don't just eat pork chops all the time, but their mahi sandwich. And you can go in there and literally you can be in and out in like 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah. And they have that great patio outside when it's nice. Yeah. It's a nice place to sit. So I'm thrilled that you mentioned two of my favorites. Is Le Tub still there, right over on the beach?
Le Tub, I'm very happy to share that we have entered into a property improvement grant with the new owner of Le Tub, which is the owner of Gigi's restaurant. He just recently acquired it, Dan Serafini. So the Serafini family that's been, you know, on the beach for many years, they are the proud new owners of Le Tub. And our participation in that grant enabled us to work with Dan on making sure, because the unique thing about Le Tub is its rustic character. And you can't go in there and call it Le Tub and replace everything about Le Tub.
Right. So
right.
It is, you know, very delicate surgery that has to take place so that, you know, the outcome for the patient is still recognizable as Le Tub. And I am, I mean, Dan is his work at Gigi's and up at what used to be Jimbo's, which is now Tiki Tiki. That's not in our district, but what he and his son have done up at the old Jimbo's is phenomenal. Some of the best seafood around is now available at what used to be a bar that if you stumbled onto the bar, you probably would exit quickly.
Yes. And how about a place or feature of the city of Hollywood that few people know about that you think is like a hidden gem?
Wow. That's a really good question. I still have to say that the Broadwalk is still a hidden gem to so many people, because you go to the Diplomat as an example. The Diplomat has so many conferences and so many people visiting. And unless you pick up something from the concierge or you know a little bit about Hollywood, you could visit the Diplomat, be there for several days, go have dinner at Sardelli's and have some of the best experiences around, but you may not find out about the Hollywood Broadwalk. And I almost feel foolish even saying that, but it really is still, I mean, the Hollywood Broadwalk, when you think about it, could not ever replace or start fresh on creating something in any other city along the coast that would even come close to replicating the Hollywood Broadwalk. And that is why coastal resiliency investment is so important to preserve and maintain that unique of all treasures in Hollywood, because it really is. I can tell you, and I said earlier, you know, I've been in South Florida literally since 1967. I came to Hollywood, my ex-wife at the time was from North Miami Beach. And so we did visit Hollywood in the evening. We used to go to a pizza place over in Hallandale, and My Pie. I don't know, do you guys remember My Pie?
No.
So My Pie, we go to My Pie, and then we drive through Hollywood Beach. But the Broadwalk at that time was like this, frankly, scary looking asphalt path that had really no character. It was still very dynamic to see this. But then years later, when I was applying for the job here in Hollywood, I made it a point to go back almost to the same exact spot that we had visited, you know, eons earlier. And I was just like in shock and awe of what I saw. Because to look in either direction, as far as the eye could see, and look at people just enjoying themselves, either skating or riding their bikes, but on this brick paver surface, with decorative lighting, et cetera. I mean, I was just like, amazed. And I think anybody that has never seen the Hollywood Broadwalk that takes that visit will come back as I did, that many years later.
It's true. I love it. And it's, you can either, as you said, stroll along it,
right,
you know, and you're looking at all these cool restaurants and shops on one side, and then the beautiful wide beach. It's a very nice Hollywood Beach is a beautifully wide, wide beach, and in the water, or you can just be running and not see most of anything or riding your bike, but in a beautiful setting. I mean, one of the main reasons we just love living in South Florida, and Hollywood has done a really good job of creating this beautiful space. So at the end of our interview, you already kind of got yours with the two places. We usually do a fun fact, a piece. So do you have a fun fact you want to share?
Yeah, it's your fun fact.
Oh, it is? It better not be my fun. What's my fun fact?
No, go ahead.
Sometimes we've done that. We don't talk about what we're going to talk about ahead of time so we can keep it fresh. But there have been a couple times when we get to the end and we share fun fact, it's almost identical, and a couple times it has been.
I had a feeling you were gonna kill it with your fun fact today. So,
so people who have listened before know that Fernando and I are data geeks, and one of the data sources that we use is RPR. So I decided to pull an RPR, which is called the Realtors Property Resource Study for Hollywood, and I did the city of Hollywood and then each one of the districts to get the top tapestry. And so for Hollywood overall, it's the set to impress crowd at 13.2%, which is also the same for downtown. So the downtown CRA is set to impress, but at 36.9% of the population. And for the beach CRA, the top tapestry segment is Golden Years at 34.3%. And just to give you a basic idea, the set to impress crowd is young, mostly single. Median age is 35.1. Median income is around 45,000. And their preferred activities are maintain close relationships with family, enjoy going to rock concerts, nightclubs, and the zoo. Wow.
That's a good breakdown. That's awesome.
So that's the tapestry report for the majority of Hollywood. In the
very good.
Well, George, we can't say enough about how appreciative we are for your time and for sharing your knowledge, and definitely you should be very proud of the contributions that you made to both the Boca community and Hollywood, and the things that you have seen since you started as a community redevelopment director, in 1988. I'm sure that we can have a lot more conversations, but perhaps that conversation is worthy of a meeting at Le Tub or
Tipsy Boar. Tipsy
Boar, for sure.
I'd enjoy that.
Thank you so much.
Listen, thank you both so much for the opportunity. We always appreciate having a chance to share, you know, our thoughts and what we do. So thank you.
Thanks for your contribution to Southeast Florida.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. We look forward to you pulling up a chair and joining us next time.
All righty. Thank you so much. Bye.